From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The state of California is the nation's most populous, and yet during presidential elections is simply left out of the equation, being a solidly blue state. Presidential campaigns simply don't make it out to the left coast once the primary elections are over. But as a state that has for years legislated through propositions on the ballot, for good or ill, this year is no different. Voters are being asked to decide on a slate of far-reaching propositions that have the potential to influence national trends and decision-making on things like the gig economy, education funding, medical technology, and mass incarceration. My guest is Marcy Winograd. She's co-founder of the Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party. She was a 2020 DNC delegate for Bernie Sanders, representing Santa Barbara, California. And she's a member of the steering committee of the Santa Barbara chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, or DSA. Welcome to the program, Marcy.
Thank you, Sonali. It's great to be with you.
So there are, as I mentioned, a number of these propositions on the ballot, and California voters now are sort of used to this sort of thing where there's this lengthy list of decisions that we are asked to make alongside, you know, electing our representatives. And maybe we'll go through some of these in groups, starting with what seems to be the highest profile one, that is Proposition 22. Highest profile only because it affects the gig economy in California. It affects the gig economy at a time of the pandemic. It is a proposition on which massively large and wealthy companies like Uber and Lyft have spent huge amounts of money. Tell me what California's Proposition 22 is and what it's trying to do.
California's Proposition 22, I recommend a no vote on that. And what it would do is it would say that gig economy workers are independent contractors. If you vote for this, you're saying they are not entitled to health care, they're not entitled to vacation, possibly they will miss out on even a minimum wage. They will not have the right to organize. So very much, I recommend a no vote on Proposition 22.
There are huge amounts of dollars being spent to push a yes on Prop 22 message. Everywhere you turn, there's ads, whether on the radio or on Facebook, or not ads on, you know, Pacifica radio stations, but commercial radio stations, and on Facebook, that say that it's a proposition that drivers for companies like Lyft and Uber support, that it's actually good for them. What's at stake with this proposition, and why are these companies so desperate to overturn an existing piece of California legislation?
I think you hit on the right word, desperate. They're spending upwards of $188 million. Uber, Lyft, DoorDash to defeat the people, to basically say we want Uber and Lyft and all these gig economy workers, Instacart, to be exempt from labor laws, from minimum wage laws. So it's really imperative, as we see more and more people during this COVID pandemic, these are urgent times, you know, looking for work, picking out groceries, driving people around. These people need to be treated with dignity and respect, and to be recognized as agents of change who can form a union, who can advocate for themselves. And if Prop 22 passes, this will be terribly disempowering for these workers and for the union movement as a whole.
This is a test case for the nation. Uber and Lyft had threatened to leave the state of California, had threatened to cease operations for, you know, the most populous state in the nation, home to major metropolitan areas like LA and San Francisco that rely on this particular form of transportation. It mentioned they've spent a lot of money. Some of the money they've spent has been to, according to a new article by Business Insider, Uber and Lyft paid $85,000 to a consulting firm run by Alice Huffman, president of California's NAACP chapter. She supports Prop 22. This seems highly suspect.
Yes, I certainly would not go with that recommendation. I would do your own research, but you know, be clear that this is an effort by these very profitable companies, Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, to defeat an assembly bill that, and what they're trying to do is repeal guarantees to these gig economy workers for a minimum wage, a right to organize, vacation pay, healthcare benefits, all of that.
And so, this also affects not just Uber and Lyft drivers, but, you know, say delivery drivers for companies like Instacart, right? Because during the pandemic, with more and more people relying on, say, grocery delivery, and millions of Americans losing jobs because of the pandemic, those unemployed Americans have been turning to do delivery work for companies like Amazon and Instacart. And they are considered contractors rather than often considered contractors rather than employers, and so don't have the same benefits as workers. And I imagine that these companies too are interested in seeing California's legislation that protects these workers be overturned, and they might be pushing for yes on 22.
And hey, if they want to leave California, let them fight the same fight in New York. Let them fight the same fight in Oregon, across the country. You know, it really needs to be a united front against the exploitation of these gig economy workers. So no on Proposition 22.
Let's turn to another proposition that has garnered a lot of attention, and that's Proposition 15. This is something on which public education depends. Proposition 15, the official description is that it requires commercial and industrial properties to be taxed based on market value and dedicates its revenue to, this would link to the revenues that are used to fund public schools. How have corporations in California taken advantage of tax loopholes to pay fewer and fewer taxes than, say, you or I?
Well, they are able to hide who is really running the corporation, or maybe when they sell the corporation, they don't. They take some of the board members from the previous corporation, they put them on the new corporation, and they have all sorts of ways of dodging the intent of our tax code. And we're hopeful that Proposition 15 will pass because it will raise an estimated $12 to $15 billion for schools and local governments.
Without raising the tax bills on ordinary Californians.
That's right. That's right. And so if you're, let's say you're a capitalist, commercial property owner, and your property is worth $3 million or more, then you will be impacted between now and 2025 by this new tax code. But it does not impact residential property owners. And that's the big scare tactic that I think those who are opposed to this proposition are using. I mean, I'm getting texts from people saying, are my property taxes going to go up?
You know, right. So say somebody might own a second home that they're renting out as a way to make income. They're not going to get an increased tax bill because of this proposition. If you are a corporate business owner worth more than $3 million, so $3 million or higher. So we're talking about really taxing the 1% here.
Well, certainly we're talking about taxing those who can afford to pay this, you know, and we've been defunded. Our schools have been defunded since 1978 when Proposition 13 passed. You know, it was sold in California as a means of addressing this burden of paying residential property taxes. And ever since then, our schools have been literally starving, really.
And so, Prop 13 is the sort of holy grail in California for various reasons that we don't have time to get into right now. So Prop 15 would pour an extra 12, if it passes, would pour an extra $12 billion through corporate taxes, through closing corporate tax loopholes for public schools. Another education-related proposition is the next one on the ballot, and that's Prop 16, which, from what I understand, would reverse the bans on affirmative action in all sorts of arenas, not just education, actually, but even in state employee hiring and on contracting, et cetera.
Exactly. So Proposition 16, that's a yes vote that I'm recommending on Proposition 16. It would basically institute some form of affirmative action in the public sector, in education. And we certainly need this. You know, we need more diverse institutions, both, you know, in public governance, in education, in the university setting. So I'm all for Proposition 16. I just wanted to mention about Proposition 15, which I forgot to mention earlier. And that is, you know, the teachers, the California Teachers Association is enthusiastically supporting Proposition 15, asks everybody to vote for it. And Democratic Socialists of America is also making Prop 15 a focal point of their electoral activity. So we have phone banks running throughout the state, DSA phone banks, to urge people to support Proposition
15. So, and so let's move now to issues around around mass incarceration. There's actually a couple of them. One is Proposition 17, so the very next one on the ballot after 15 and 16. This one, Proposition 17, would restore voting rights to parolees in California. Honestly, I was not aware that in California, parolees weren't allowed to vote. Tell me a little bit about this and what you're recommending.
I was not aware of that either, Sonali, until I was canvassing in Goleta during the Bernie Sanders campaign before the primary. And you know, a guy answered the phone. He said, I'd love to vote for Bernie Sanders, but I can't. I'm on parole. And I thought, oh, no, you can't. But he was right.
Wow.
If you're on parole right now in California, you cannot vote. So this would restore those rights to those who are out of prison on parole. And, you know, the argument is that we want to reintegrate people into society. That's part of, you know, if they have committed some crime, that's part of their reintegration. That's part of their rehabilitation. Have them invest in the society. So it's counterproductive to deny people the right to vote.
And we knew that, for example, in a state like Florida, felons being able to finally vote has received outsized attention, in part because Florida is a battleground state. We don't, unfortunately, you know, it's sort of strange that the disenfranchisement of people in California who've been passed through the criminal justice system isn't as big of an issue, because California is not a battleground state, perhaps. That might be part of the reason why it hasn't been a big issue. There is another aspect of the California ballot that addresses the issue of the criminal justice system, but also addresses the issue, another one addressing the issue of voting. Let's stick with Proposition 18 before we go skipping down to Prop 20. Proposition 18 will also expand voting rights, not to parolees, but to people who are under the age of 18. I thought this was a little controversial. Tell me about this.
I don't think it should be controversial. I mean, I think we should absolutely give voting rights to those who are 17 years old. That's Proposition 18, yes on 18. People who are 17 can vote in primaries and special elections if, for example, the primary, if they're gonna turn 18 by the general election, they will be able to vote in the primary at age 17, but also in special elections. And the theory is, you know, we want to prepare our students, our 17-year-olds, to engage in the world, to be active, to be invested in their governance. And the sooner the better, really. They can drive a car, they can cast a vote, right?
I wasn't aware of this, but there are 18 states along with Washington, D.C. that that allowed 17-year-olds as of this year, who will be 18 by the time of the general election, to vote in primary elections. So that's an interesting one. I suppose if you can get young people involved and used to the act of voting and it becomes sort of part of their civic duty, this is sort of a get-out-the-vote style proposition that you would imagine wouldn't face much opposition, except these days the sheer act of voting has become so politicized, has it not?
Well, yes, and it is facing opposition from Republicans who are fearful that a youthful vote is a vote for progressive policies, progressive candidates, progressive initiatives. So they want to suppress the vote. They don't want that vote.
Let's go through and look at another tax-related proposition on the California ballot, and that is Proposition 19. We talked first about closing tax loopholes in Proposition 15 to better fund schools. Proposition 19 is also around the issue of tax breaks. How is it different? What does it entail?
Well, Proposition 19 is one that might make you a little dizzy when you read it. You know, there's so much in the fine print. And people are all over the map on this Proposition 19. For example, I believe the California Democratic Party is urging a yes vote, but the League of Women Voters is urging a no vote. So without going into great detail, Proposition 19, a yes vote on that would allow homeowners who are 55 or over, seniors, to purchase new homes three times with exceptional tax breaks that are not available to those who are younger. In addition, if you inherit property, you can only hold on to it at the current property tax for a year unless you Let me redo that.
You know, and the fact that you're having trouble with this just goes to show that some of these California propositions are incredibly complicated, and this cuts to the heart of the critique around legislating through the ballot, through propositions, when voters who may not have the training, and you are someone who is very much involved in politics and are having a hard time making sense of this convoluted proposition, voters are expected to make these decisions, and you have moneyed interests that may be able to pour unlimited amounts of money to get their way and fool voters one way or another, which is just deeply troubling and not as democratic as we would like.
Yes, and to backtrack so that I sound like I'm making sense, if Proposition 19 passes, children, grown children, who inherit property would have to move in within a year to keep the lower property tax base. So I, as I said, people are all over the map on this. You know, I lean no on Proposition 19, but it is supported by a lot of state officials because they believe it will bring money into the state of California. On the other hand, is it really fair to penalize homebuyers who are younger than 55?
So we talked about parolees having the right to vote. There's another proposition that involves our criminal justice system, and that is Proposition 20. Proposition 20 is one that would make changes to policies related to criminal sentencing charges, prison release, and DNA collection. That's the official sort of description of it. What is it really, and what are you recommending?
Well, I am recommending a no on Proposition 20 because, in short, it is an effort to roll back criminal justice reforms and to expand the prison industrial complex in California. You know, we are under a court order to release, we were to release inmates. Our prisons were so crowded. And what this would do is it would roll back a lot of the advances in criminal justice reforms by reinstating what they call a get tough law enforcement system that, for example, with those who may have been found guilty of stealing a bicycle that was worth more than $250, they could be treated as though they were felons, and their punishments would be much greater than previously. It also allows the state to collect DNA from people convicted of misdemeanors, like shoplifting.
Misdemeanors, so, not felonies, misdemeanors.
Wow. No, on Proposition 20.
Supporters of Proposition 20 include, of course, the Republican Party of California, Representative Devin Nunes, who is, of course, a person in the Party of National Significance, and Police Unions, Association for Los Angeles Deputy Sheriffs, LA Police Protective League, and the Peace Officers Research Association of California. So the police unions support this. And so, of course, for voters who might want to have some guidance on how they might choose their position, that may or may not make a difference. We mentioned, we discussed earlier the issue of housing and taxation. Proposition 21, which is the next on the list, involves rent control. Let's go through that one. It expands local government's power to use rent control. Now, you know, we hear of the terms rent control often with regard to cities like New York, where prices, rents are so high, and there's a long tradition of rent control. But California has had a massive housing crisis for years now. What would this proposition do? Would it address the issue of California's housing crisis?
Well, I recommend a yes vote on Proposition 21. And yes, I think it would, because local governments, as you mentioned, could enact rent control on residential properties that are over 15 years old. Under Costa-Hawkins, the act that was instituted in the 1970s, local governments cannot impose rent control on buildings unless they are older than, unless they were built before 1995, I believe. So this would exponentially increase the authority of local governments to enact rent control. And we have so many homeless people. You know, the LA Times had a big article this week on the growing number of homeless people in California, and many of them are university students or community college students. So we need to make housing more affordable in our state, and this is one avenue.
My guest has been Marcy Winograd, co-founder of the Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party. She was also a 2020 DNC delegate for Bernie Sanders representing Santa Barbara, California. She's a member of the steering committee of the Santa Barbara chapter of Democratic Socialists of America. We've been discussing her recommendations on the California ballot propositions. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.